Hello and welcome to the Digital Resilience Podcast. With so many aspects of our lives now involving using technology in a digital world, supporting our children and young people to be digitally resilient is fundamental. Building digital resilience in our children and young people also depends on the resilience of our families and communities. Therefore, this podcast aims to provide families, education practitioners, professionals, and governors with the latest resources, information, and guidance to enhance their digital resilience. Social media may give the impression that some people are flawless and living their best life all the time. But remember, you are only seeing the highlights rather than the full picture. Real life isn't always perfect. And that's why in this podcast, we'll be discussing staying true to yourself online. And like always, with me today is Gwion. Gwion, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Joel. How are you?
Yeah, excellent, thank you.
Good, good. So the topic of today's podcast is staying true to yourself online. And most of what we're going to be talking about is based on social media. So I thought that we'd start by looking at the Google definition for social media. And Google tells me that social media is anything that's linked to websites that allow you to share content online and participate in any social networking. So what I thought, Joel, is that we'd start today off with a quiz, and I haven't told you about this yet, so I'm going to put you on the spot this morning, if that's okay.
Yeah, okay. Fire away.
Are you feeling knowledgeable?
I am this morning, yeah.
Yeah, good.
Yep.
Good, good. So I'm going to ask you three questions, and the questions are based on social media stats. What I wanted to do is have a guess or an estimate. Give me an estimate as an answer for each one. The first question is based on Twitter. And the question is, how many tweets are sent out per day on average?
Right, I use Twitter. This is the one I use most out of all the platforms. I know how many people use it, so this is going to be quite high, I'd say. Let's say 150 million.
Ooh, you're a bit short there, Joel. So the right answer is, on average, it's about 500 million tweets that are sent out per day. So that equates to about 6,000 tweets per second. So since we started recording this podcast, there's probably been tens of thousands of tweets that have been sent out. So the second question, Joel, is based on YouTube. So I know that you use YouTube quite often.
Yeah, I do use YouTube. I used it last night. I couldn't get the lawnmower to start, so type it into YouTube, how to get the lawnmower to start, and then, yep, solved it. So thanks, YouTube, for solving that problem. It's just, most of all, like, any how-to videos. I listen to a lot of music on YouTube as well if I'm doing some work.
Yeah, quite similar to you. I use it to fix things. I remember my toilet was broken once, and I went onto YouTube and managed to diagnose a problem using YouTube, and also managed to find the part that I wanted, bought that on Amazon, and then actually went ahead to change a flush valve in the toilet. So I was quite proud of myself, actually, and I saved myself a call-out fee from the plumber. So, yeah.
Very impressive, yeah. And it shows you some positive impact of social media or social platforms, doesn't it?
Definitely, definitely. The question about YouTube now is, how many hours of videos are watched every day on YouTube?
Wow, this is going to be really high. So, what did you say, 500 million tweets? I'm going to go higher than that. I'm going to say 700 million.
Still a bit short, so they claim that over 1 billion hours of videos are watched per day.
Wow.
Yeah.
Imagine if you had an advert up on YouTube and having people watch those videos and coming across your adverts.
Yeah, that's
imagine
that's
the impact
they,
there.
That's how they make money, probably, isn't it? So they charge advertisers to put an advert. When they can give them a stat like that, so there's 1 billion hours of videos watched per day.
Exactly.
Anybody would want to advertise their product on YouTube, wouldn't they? So far, Joel, you've scored 0 out of 2.
So what's the prize, actually? Is the prize?
Pride.
Okay, but come on, let's have question number three.
Question number three. This is based on Instagram. And the question is, how many times per day is that like button clicked or tapped on Instagram?
Well, I'd say Instagram's a second most popular platform that I use, I'd say, after Twitter. And I'd say I'm going to go with something similar to what I with Twitter. So 500 million, I'd say.
You're very short on this one. The answer is, in fact, on average, 4.2 billion.
Wow. Is it?
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
Right, is that it now?
That's it. You scored a grand total of 0 out of 3 hole.
So that's my pride absolutely vanished there. So for people that haven't used these platforms, Gwen, can you just give them a brief description of all these platforms, please?
I can, yeah. So I'm going to start off with another question, actually, Hoel, if that's okay with you. What is the most popular platform to date?
What, now, currently?
Currently.
Okay, I know for a fact that it was Facebook. I don't think it's Facebook now. I think it's changed. I'm going to say Instagram.
You're incorrect once again. The correct answer is the first one you said, which was Facebook.
Still, is it?
Still, yes, yeah, quite significantly the most popular one. And it's based because of the broad age range of people using Facebook. Think about it, you can get a Facebook account when you're 13. And I know people who are over 100 years old who've got a Facebook account as well. So it's because of the broadness of the users. So Facebook, as most people know, is a platform where you can contact your friends, people you might not have their phone number. You can advertise what you do on Facebook. You can use it for marketing purposes, and you can use it just to let people know what you've been doing. So that's Facebook. The second most popular platform, Hoel, do you know what that is?
I'm going to go with Instagram again.
No, you're incorrect once more. Yeah. Second most popular is YouTube. And we've discussed that. That's your video sharing platform. The third most popular is WhatsApp. A lot of people use WhatsApp. That's your sort of instant messaging service. You can send content, share content with your contacts, and you can also take part in group conversations. And next on the list is Instagram.
Okay.
So we discussed Instagram briefly a couple of minutes ago. Instagram is your image sharing platform, so you can use this to share your images and see other people's images as well. So you can follow people that you might know, people that you don't know, just to follow their lives and see what they've been doing on Instagram. Next down on the list is TikTok, and this seems to be the new kid on the block. So this is a platform where people are able to share videos, usually videos of themselves doing something. And what we see on TikTok is there's a lot of challenges set. So people set challenges and other people respond to that challenge by recording themselves performing or completing that challenge. They post that then online to get responses. So that's TikTok for you. Have I missed anything there, Hoel?
I'm just thinking, I remember when it came out, Snapchat. Where's Snapchat on the list?
Snapchat is quite low down, you know, it's down. It's about number 10 or 11 on the list.
Right, okay.
And I think that's based because 73% of Snapchat users, they are between 18 and 24 years old. So okay. It's quite a sort of narrow age group of people using Snapchat. But it's interesting that you ask about Snapchat because I've never used Snapchat before. And I was speaking with somebody who explained to me what something called Snapstreak was. And it's a feature within Snapchat where, imagine now, Hoel, you and me send pictures to each other on Snapchat. And for each consecutive day that we do that, we get a score. So we get 1 point per day, and we call that a streak. So, for example, if we've sent images to each other for 30 days, we've got a streak score of 30. But if we miss a single day then, we go back down to 0. And what we see with this is a new pattern where people are now able to start quantifying their relationships. And this happens with adults, but mainly with children and young people. For example, Marion down the road and me, we've got a streak of about 40. We are friends, but Marion is not as good a friend as Sam. Sam and me, we've got a streak of about 260. Sam is my best friend because I've got a big streak with him. I I've got the numbers now to prove that me and Sam are best friends. And a piece of research recently showed quite a scary figure. A piece of research showed that unless somebody has a streak of 73 with another person, they're not considered, they don't consider them as being a friend.
Wow, things have changed since when we were in school, Gwyn, haven't they?
Definitely. I'm just starting out to imagine the social pressure on individuals, especially young people and children, the pressure now to fit in and be popular. So unless I haven't got that streak with the members in my classroom, what effect does that have on my social acceptance?
Something similar I've got here now. I've got a stat in front of me. Same kind of thing, but with Instagram. How many likes and followers you need to be happy. So it says here that you need to have 52 likes on a single post for you to be happy with what you've posted, and at least 214 followers. So again, it's quantifying, isn't it?
Yeah. So everything they do online now, they're able to measure the effect, aren't they? They're able to measure the effectiveness and measure to what extent they fit in this digital society. So based on all the facts and the stats that we've just shared with you, what we see is a new pattern emerging online now where people tend to create sort of fake personas and try to create and share a false image of their lives. And the purpose behind this is usually they want to be able to fit in. They want to maybe do stuff that they wouldn't usually do that isn't true to who they are. They might want to generate the number of likes, they might want to gain more followers, they might want higher streak numbers. It's all to do with popularity and being able to fit in. And what we see is a tendency of people doing stuff they wouldn't usually do. I don't know if you've come across something like this, Joel.
Well, it's funny you say that, yeah. So I saw this the other day. I was having a meal in a local restaurant, and someone had ordered the steak, and it, to be fair, it looked really good. It was the perfect steak with those perfect chips and a perfect sauce drizzling all over the top. And then before doing anything, this individual had to take a photograph of this. And I noticed she was on Instagram, so posting on Instagram a meal, maybe, I'm not sure, maybe she wouldn't have done this in the past. Maybe she would have stayed home to have a meal, but this was kind of putting pressure on her to go out to have that perfect meal to make her look like she's having these all the time.
It's interesting, isn't it? So that's a shift in behaviour that we see in society. So if you'd have asked that person what was the most important thing, was it about eating that steak or sharing the picture of it?
Yeah, and you don't know, do you? Maybe if Instagram or these kind of platforms weren't around, she wouldn't have paid that amount of money to get that perfect picture. She would have stayed home to have a meal. You don't know, do you?
No, exactly. Another change in behaviour that I've noticed recently is how people react to situations they want to sort of remember. So situations that are quite spectacular, such as you've gone to the top of the Empire State Building, or you've gone to the top of the Eiffel Tower, you've just landed on the ferry in Dublin, something like that is out of the ordinary. What people tend to do now, rather than enjoying the moment, is they get their phones out and they want to take a picture of it. So it's more important to some people to capture and share the moment than actually enjoying the moment itself. And there's a change of behaviour in society, because a lot of people now get their phones out in most situations and try to capture that moment with the intention sometimes of sharing that moment instead of enjoying it. So there's a famous picture, and it was taken in a football stadium in Barcelona. Lionel Messi just scored, and there's a picture of the crowd, and there's about 40 people in the picture. Lionel Messi's running towards them to celebrate. There's one elderly lady sat in the middle of that picture, and she has a big smile on her face, and she's genuinely enjoying that moment. So Lionel Messi's running up towards her to celebrate. She's enjoying, she's in the moment, she's enjoying it. The other people, so there's roughly about another 30 something people in that picture. Everybody else has got their phones out. So what you can see is you can see the back of about 30 something phones, and this elderly lady sat in the middle. So it was more important for the rest of the people in that picture to capture that moment and share it, as opposed to actually enjoying it.
It's interesting you say that, Gwyn. I was on a holiday not long ago now, and it's a behaviour that I hadn't come across before, really. If you go back 10 years, this wouldn't happen. And what it was, people had a selfie stick. So they wanted that picture proving that they were there at that location so they can actually post it on Instagram for others to see. So I'm going to switch this on to you now, Gwion. I'm going to ask you a question, which is, what time do you think is best to post to have a response to an Instagram post?
It's an interesting question. I would say it would be about 8 o'clock on a Sunday evening, because a lot of people tend to be sitting down on a sofa scrolling through their social media feeds, possibly.
Right, okay, you're wrong there. So the best times is Tuesday between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. And then the worst day is actually Sunday, which surprises me really, yeah, because you'd think that on a Sunday a lot of people are sat at home, a lot of time on their hand, and then would be able to post.
That's interesting stuff.
One piece of research I came across, Gwion, was from the Royal Society of Public Health, and it was a report examining the positive and negative effects of social media on young people's health. So having a look at which platform had the most positive effect and had a look at which platform had the most negative effect. So the most positive effect on people's lives was YouTube. So Gwion, can you think of why this was?
So I'd probably say things like community building, health awareness, self-expression.
Yeah, right there, yeah. Can you think of the least positive or the most negative?
I'd probably go something like Snapchat.
No, it wasn't Snapchat, it's actually Instagram. So when you think about it, it's a lot of photos on Instagram and things that get affected by Instagram in a negative way is it increases anxiety, depression, affects people's sleep, and another one that stands out here is FOMO, or the fear of missing out. So all these good photographs that people are posting up, people are then being affected by that and thinking, oh, my life is not as good as theirs. Right, I found this comment online, Gwion, which says, social media has now been described as more addictive than cigarettes and alcohol, and is now so entrenched in the lives of young people that it's no longer possible to ignore it when talking about young people's mental health issues.
Yeah, it's an interesting comment, that is, and I'll agree with the fact that it's entrenched. And it's something we as a teaching profession now, it's something that we've got to embrace, and it's something that we've got to take on as a fact that it's not going to go away. So it's not something that is here for now and it's going to disappear in a couple of months or a couple of years' time. It's quite obvious now that social media is here and is here to stay. So in terms of pedagogy around how you teach young people to be responsible citizens of the digital world, I found this model recently, Howell, and it's called the Sun Technique. I don't know whether you've heard about it or not.
I've heard about it, yeah, but not much, to be honest with you.
Okay, so in my opinion, it's quite an effective mindset to develop now once you start talking about the digital world with young people. So Sun, the S refers to suspending judgment. And this is all about giving out positive energy, not making the child or that young person feel threatened. So even though if they are using social media platforms that they are maybe too young to use, even if they are doing silly things on social media, it's about not making them feel threatened. It's all about building that bridge, developing that relationship in a positive way and not making them feel threatened. The second part is the EU, that refers to understanding. And this is where you try to get inside the other person's head, trying to understand their thinking. So what led them to do the type of activity that they've been doing? Asking questions such as, tell me more about it. Let me understand what you think. Let me understand how you feel. What else do you like about this platform? What else could you do? You're trying to understand their point of view or their way of thinking. And the last part, the N, this is first in nurture. So this is all about building. You're trying to build a more positive outlook for that pupil or for that young person or that child in reference to whatever you're discussing with them. So you're looking for alternatives. You're looking for different ways to do stuff, but in a safer and more responsible way. So by using this model, it's a good way to build that positivity. And it's all about building that trust and that relationship with your pupils, children, young people, even adults, trying to understand and nurture their way. And this is basically based on the way that I used to deal with situations myself when I was teaching. If I heard about pupils discussing Facebook, I tell her, oh, don't do that. You shouldn't be doing that. You should be 13 if you want to have a Facebook account. So what I did is I reacted, and I was following a model that was completely polar opposite to the sun technique. I was following the rain technique. So instead of suspending my judgment, I reacted. I reacted quickly. I made them feel as though they've done something wrong. I gave them a lot of negative energy, so they felt threatened straight away. The second part is I assumed that I knew what they were doing. So rather than understanding what they were doing, I assumed, oh, they must be on Facebook because they want to do X, Y, Z. I didn't get to know what they were actually doing. So I assumed I understood what they were doing. And the last part, the IN, which is rain, the end of the word rain, refers to insist. So I tend to tell them, no, you shouldn't do that. Do this instead. Don't go on Facebook until you're 13. Don't post videos on YouTube. Don't play games if you're too young to play them. So I insisted that they should follow my advice rather than try to nurture their current thinking. So it's very, very important that we do stick to the positive side of that model, which is the sun. So we avoid the rain, we aim towards the sun always. And for me, this is a very positive mindset that you should be developing when you discuss these type of things with children. What's most important here is that you get to know your children. You get to know what their trends are. What do they tend to do online? What do they do online in their spare time? If they do use Instagram, what kind of things do they do? What do they think is good? What do they think is negative about Instagram? If they're using Snapchat, what do they do on Snapchat? How do they make sure it's safe? By having this open discussion with pupils in a non-threatening way, it's a very, very good way then to get into their minds and help nurture their thinking.
So the next piece we've got for you now is some top tips for keeping your social media experience positive, both for you as adults and as children and young people. So the first tip is be yourself. So it can be tempting to create a false persona or a misleading impression of your life online because of your perceptions of others' lives. So what you need to do is create a social media presence that is aligned with your own identity and values.
The second tip is keep perspective. So keep in mind that you're not always seeing the full picture when you see other people's social media feeds. And also that your value as a person is not reflected in the number of likes that your post gets online.
So number three is take control. So you need to think about who you follow. Do they share the same interests and values as you? If not, hide or unfollow the feeds and users on content that makes you feel negative about yourself. So, you know, a lot of these social media apps have options to report or block unwanted content. So go ahead and do that.
The fourth tip is about finding the balance. Do you ever feel that you sit there scrolling through your social media feeds without even realizing it? Be mindful and recognize when you need to take a break.
And the last one is be positive. Think before you post. Does this make me feel good about myself? Would you express the same opinion offline? Thinking of yourself and others will ensure a positive experience and help you avoid unnecessary drama. And that's it, our top tips for today. And unfortunately, Cuion, that's all we got time for today. So thank you very much for listening.
Yeah, thanks everyone. Click on that subscribe button if you want to follow this podcast, and hopefully we'll be back quite soon. So look out for that notification.